Mr. Lee.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Ji Xianli, and I represent petitioner. Here, the BIA found petitioner not to be credible. The BIA identified several reasons. I would like to address the church attendance first, because according to the BIA...
Well, church attendance might be your best way to go in this particular situation, but why don't you address the falsity in his 2016 asylum application? Because that to me is pretty important. He has an asylum application. He doesn't tell anybody that was detained in Cuba or that even went to Cuba. He only says China. Then he goes to the asylum interview, and he tells them that he goes to Cuba. So again, there's a contradiction, and that's the one that the BIA and the IJ come up with. And then they don't go very far before he goes to the merits hearing, and counsel admits that he didn't mention that he went to Cuba. He was detained in Cuba.
On the asylum application form?
In the merits hearing, counsel got up and admitted that the fact about Cuba was not mentioned in the application.
Well, Your Honor, I think the fact that the Cuba trip was not mentioned in the asylum application actually is an oversight by the asylum officer.
Oversight?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, just a minute. You can argue oversight, but again, you and I have been in front of each other before. I'm on substantial evidence review. You arguing oversight is just a good argument by counsel.
Okay.
But the BIA is entitled to get their due as well in their argument, which is you didn't say anything about this in your asylum application. In your asylum interview, you finally tell us. And then in your merits hearing, you admit that you didn't put it in there. So they said that's a problem.
Okay.
Then the next thing they go to is they say, and then you say you were detained for a week in your asylum interview, and you went to jail for 7 days, and then when you get to your merits hearing, you say it's only a day. So again, they caught him in another contradiction. Then they go to the next one, where it is, how long did you stay in Cuba? In one time he says 2 months, and another time he says 8 months. All of those significant contradictions in very important applications and hearings. Now, why can't I say that there is substantial evidence then to sustain the BIA's determination?
Because, Your Honor, those inconsistencies do not reflect.
Because what?
The points that you just pointed out, the discrepancies, do not reflect negatively upon the petitioner's propensity to lie, because it does not reflect in any way in his honesty. Actually, it reflects in his honesty, because petitioner was the one who volunteered the information.
Well, just a minute. I didn't even think that they argued that in front of the BIA. I mean, in front of the BIA, he seems to suggest that this thing about the... Well, first of all, he doesn't say too much about, except that he went to Cuba, and he didn't have an explanation of why he didn't do that. But then, when it goes to the detained for a week and for 7 days, he says, well, that's all the interpreter's fault. The interpreter didn't have the right thing down. But the asylum interviewer didn't say detained for 1 week or 7 days or whatever. He differentiated the days and the way he laid it out. So I'm having a tough time understanding why the BIA is wrong in saying that's implausible that the interpreter was the problem.
Well, Your Honor, let's just assuming those the inconsistencies do exist. It's our argument that they do not reflect his propensity for dishonesty, because he's the one who mentioned the Cuba trip at his assignment interview. Actually, the assignment officer went through those his assignment application item by item. The assignment interview, the assignment officer put a check mark on the question whether or not you were arrested in any other country than United States. So at that time, the assignment officer should.
You're saying even though those are big inconsistencies, and we see that they are, we should ignore that part because that does not sustain the substantial evidence review? What do I do with the length of stay? 2 months or 8 months?
You just said there's nothing that the petitioner here can gain by changing the length of his stay in Cuba. So therefore, it does not go to the heart of his assignment.
So again, you admit the inconsistency, you just don't think it sustains?
Yes, Your Honor. So then we have to look at this inconsistency in the context, again, in the totality of circumstances.
Why don't we look at the fine receipt?
Okay, the fine receipt.
It contains a date 9/24/14. Then there's a stamp. Looks like it's stamped on there with 2009.
Okay, Your Honor.
So your client says that date doesn't relate to the year. But when he was confronted about what does it relate to, he doesn't know.
I happen to
agree. Now, because of this discrepancy, the BIA determined the document didn't support his testimony. That seems pretty plausible.
Well, the document does support his testimony, Your Honor. Because the number 2009 does not refer to the year.
I'm not trying to say what is right or what is wrong. I'm just saying when you got a stamp right on it that says 2009, and you give your client the chance to say, what does that relate to? And he says, oh, well, I don't have any idea. Why is it bad for the BIA to say, well, we're not going to rely on that document?
No, the board has a document in front of itself, and also the court has the document in front of the court. And if we look at that's the port page 465 of the administrative record, and it says registration number 2009 with serial number 31. So it's a part of registration number. Your Honor, judging by my accent, you know that I'm a native Chinese speaker. Just look at the original of the receipt, and any reasonable person who understands Mandarin or Chinese will tell that 2009 actually is not part of the stamp; it's part of the series number.
I understand your good argument, and if I were there, maybe I'd have bought it. But the bottom line is, the BIA said he doesn't know what that is about. He doesn't know why it's there. He doesn't understand the situation. So therefore, we're just not going to use that document to help. Okay. That's all they said.
Yeah. Then I agree with you, Your Honor. Maybe the document does not help his credibility, but it does not detract from his credibility. So
we're already past the detraction. We've talked about those other ones, which we've already talked about. That's why.
So, Your Honor, also the court has a property decision that's in Cuma Garland, and the panel agree with me that the church attendance is not a valid reason for the adverse credibility finding, and the court in Cuma versus Garland.
I guess my worry about that is this, and I don't mean to monopolize here, but even if I give you that it seemed pretty implausible about what they said about church attendance. It seems they've got lots of reasons otherwise. That's why I had you address those first.
So what
I might even go with you on the implausibility of the church. But I still have lots of reasons to sustain the credibility determination. That's why I had you talk about those first.
But then the court should not substitute, as you pointed out earlier, Your Honor, the court should not substitute its judgment with the BIA's judgment. Because in the case of Kuma, and the court says that if the petitioner has satisfactorily invalidated at least some, if not all, of the reasons identified by the BIA for its adverse credibility finding, the court should remand to the BIA to determine whether the remaining factors are sufficient in title of the totality of the circumstances.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Lee. We've taken you past your time. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Spurlock.
Thank you. Substantial evidence supports the agency's adverse credibility finding in this case and also their application, although totality of the circumstances in this case clearly shows that, just if nothing else, based on his false statements in his asylum application and his later false statements to, or at least conflicting statements between his testimony and the asylum officers.
Counsel, as I understand it, the petitioner only challenges the adverse credibility finding on appeal, right?
Correct.
That if he doesn't get that, we have to send the case back for a merits finding. Isn't that true?
I believe with this case, that's true. I believe that's true. There's really no question that the petitioner, when he testified before the asylum officer, said that he had been detained for 7 days.
Do we know whether that's his words or the asylum officer's words?
It's written down by the asylum officer on the asylum officer's memorandum. It's not a verbatim transcript, but they wrote down what the petitioner had said as he was.
I guess that's kind of the problem with at least with the concern about the translation issue, it's not sure exactly what the process is, but if those aren't his words and the translation issue kind of arose in between what he said and how the officer took it.
Yeah, Your Honor, I think the best argument for why there was no translation error in that issue between 1 day and 7 days is because he also says at one point in the asylum officer's notes, 1 week, 7 days. He made a lot of argument about the one and the seven character in Mandarin look the same, and so they're easily confused. But it's not just 1 7, it's also 1 1. Is there also confusion between week and day? He didn't mention that. So you have it in the asylum officer's notes, both referred to as 7 days and 1 week, not so that you don't have that problem at all. It seems pretty clear that it's...
But both instances are the asylum officer's notes, not a transcript of his testimony.
Correct. You're right. And, Your Honor, there's other issues. I mean, if it was just a translation error, it wouldn't just be the 1 day versus the 7 days, but it also would be his other inconsistencies between his asylum testimony with the asylum officer and then later his trial testimony, which was also inconsistent on the length of time that he was detained. He went from 2 months with the asylum officer and then admitted
length of time that he visited.
Correct. And later changed that to 8 months, which was a substantial difference in time. And
did he have the opportunity to explain that inconsistency at the hearing?
The immigration judge certainly was asking questions like, why would you have gone 8 months versus 2 months? And the explanation was, yes, I went there for 8 months. He didn't explain why he had changed from 2 to 8 months. But if
he were going to say he didn't have an explanation or wasn't given the chance for an explanation, he didn't exhaust that in front of the BIA at all, did he?
Correct, Your Honor. And in fact,
where have we required exhaustion of arguments rather than rather than claims. I mean, so we have a right. So the claim here is that I was not given the opportunity. The IJ did not adhere to our step process for it, and that's one element of the argument. But it's unclear to me whether that's an argument, which typically don't require exhaustion of, or whether it's an issue or claim that we would require exhaustion of. That he spoke to, he did raise the general issue of on that point.
Yeah, I would respond, Your Honor, by saying not only did he not exhaust that specific type of argument, which is a very specific argument, was he given the opportunity to explain. He actually didn't, it wouldn't have been necessary to ask that question or to raise that issue, because his entire thrust in his appeal to the board was there's no problem here. These are minor problems. These aren't major inconsistencies. They are inconsistencies, but they're just simply minor. That was the entire thrust of his argument, which is really kind of not, I wouldn't say the opposite, but it's not on the same track of I wasn't given an opportunity to explain these differences.
What about the question about who detained him, the question about whether it's the airport police or the police? Is that, how much weight should we put on that, given how it came out?
It's very clear in the asylum officer's notes that he said he was arrested by the police. And when he was asked, who did you pay the fine to? He said, the police station, the Cuban police station. He said nothing about airport detention. And it's clear why, it's a definitely an inconsistency, talking about, I wasn't detained, I didn't, at first his entire argument about why he was detained or not detained, he said, well, I didn't lie on my asylum application because I don't consider what happened in Cuba to be the same thing as what the asylum application question was asking, which made no sense because it asked specifically detained, held, interrogated. It includes, very expansive. It's not just arrested.
And what was so there was some colloquy with the immigration judge on that point. What was the, where did the IJ give a specific cogent reason not to accept his explanation? They're both police, they're different places.
Well, I think the basic finding was the purpose of making that change in his story or his narrative was that it was less damning to his immigration case that he had completely forgotten to, or completely failed to mention this entire incident on his asylum application completely and never changed it, even though he later had the opportunity to change it. I think that was the entire thrust of what the immigration judge found.
Do you, is the government relying on the inconsistencies with respect to the church attendance?
We do believe that substantial evidence supports the immigration judges and as found by the board's finding that there was inconsistency in the testimony between the petitioner and his wife. The petitioner testified that the reason why he did not attend church on the Big Island was because there were no churches where they spoke Chinese on the Big Island, so they didn't go to church on the Big Island. And his wife came back and testified that yes, in fact, there were churches on the Big Island that they did speak Chinese, but they didn't go to them because they didn't believe in baptism.
Why isn't that consistent? If I refer to my church and that there are none of, you know, there are no churches, why is it inconsistent that he's not also referring to the churches that reflect his denomination?
I think he was saying that there were no churches at all on the Big Island that
were enough
Chinese. I think that was the crux of what the inconsistent finding was. There's sort of a plausibility finding as well with that issue, but that was the inconsistency.
The plausibility that there are no churches. So the IJ and the board, to the extent it just accepted the inconsistency finding, was correct in deciding for itself which churches may or may not count as a church for his worship purposes?
No, the plausibility finding related to the fact that petitioner's entire basis for claiming that he left China for religious persecution purposes was because he wasn't able to go to a house church. He wasn't able to attend a church, so he left China. So the implausibility was that he would move to the United States to an area where there would be no church that he would be able to attend for whatever reason, either because they didn't speak Chinese in that church or because they he wasn't in agreement with their theology. You would think that he would make that decision. It would be more plausible that you would make a decision if you fled China for religious purposes because you weren't able to go to church. You would go someplace where you were able to go to church.
Well, but he says he attends church in Honolulu one or two times a month, and his wife doesn't go.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is true.
I mean, I think the government's argument on this is a little problematic. I think it's kind of inconsistent. He testifies he's very religious. He wants to go to his house church. He goes to house church even when he can, even after his arrest. He doesn't attend church on the Big Island because there's no Chinese churches. Then the wife says there is a church, but they don't go because they don't practice baptism. He didn't say that. She did. Then he says he attends church in Honolulu one or two times a month, but his wife doesn't go. And then they say they both read the Bible, and then all of a sudden the IJ jumps to the conclusion he moves to a place where he can't attend church. I mean, he can attend church. He went in Honolulu.
I think if I could answer your question, Judge, although I don't know that I can point it to the agency's specific language, but I think it would be safe to say it's implausible that especially the entire reason why you moved to the Big Island is for economic reasons, so you can get a job. That's why he said he moved to the Big Island, was for money purposes, so they could work. I think he also testified that the restaurant that he was working with on the Big Island was experiencing tough financial problems, and that was one of the reasons why. I think I would argue that the fact that he's arguing that he's spending $178 twice a month to fly back to Honolulu also is probably not plausible.
Well, I didn't say that. You might argue it.
If the judges don't have any more questions.
It appears not. Thank you. Mr. Lee, rebuttal?
I'd just like to address the church attendance issue just raised. And actually, the BIA did not find that the petitioner's testimony is impossible in this aspect. The BIA only mentioned about the discrepancy. As the record shows that there actually there's no actual discrepancy. If the IJ understand that the petitioner's testimony to be that there's no church that he can attend in a Big Island. And let's assume there is a discrepancy. So because the BIA was the one that raised this discrepancy issue on the first instance, so petitioner did not have an opportunity to explain the discrepancy. So clearly, this factor is invalid to support an adverse credibility determination.
Mr. Lee, could I have your response to your friend's argument about the length of detention question, the inconsistencies apparent between the notes and the testimony?
Yeah, actually, petitioner did answer that when he was asked about the length of detention, he said approximately 2 months is more than 2 months. He said it's been a while, I couldn't remember. And then 8 months, I would argue that is more than 2 months.
No, I'm sorry, about the detention, the week versus day issue, his arrest issue. The 1 week.
The 1 week, 7 days versus 1 day.
The 1 and the 7 in Mandarin Chinese are very, can be easily mixed up. So maybe that's something was lost in the translation, but we don't know. But just the nature, we're just arguing that because the agency should not place too much weight on the reliability of the actually asylum officer's notes, because first of all, it's not the nature of the how the interview was conducted. So and the court has precedent decisions saying that the asylum interview process by nature is not reliable.
Right. Thank you very much. Thank both counsel for their helpful arguments. The case is submitted.